You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
First of all, on behalf of Friends of Europe, welcome to our breakfast meeting. My name is Tamsin Rose, and I'm the non-resident fellow working particularly on Health and Quality Europe. I need to pass to you all an apology from Mr. Pavel Poch. He is the group spokesperson for SND on Greece. And as you can imagine, he's been giving interviews all night, and as I speak, is probably in front of a camera right now. So he will be unable to join us because circumstances are slightly different. But I'm delighted to welcome all of you, and also to welcome two other MEPs that have joined us today who aren't officially on the agenda, but we will welcome their input. That is Mrs. Karen Kadenbach and Mr. Bogovic.
And welcome. Mr. Mikulasik.
And Mikulasik. Excellent. This is a record. We have five MEPs in the room. Excellent. So, that perhaps that's a sign of how important the Parliament feels that this issue should be. Just to give you some framework why we're here, Friends of Europe launched a reflection process, and there was a multi-stakeholder group involving academics, NGOs, patient groups, policymakers from the institutions, financiers, and healthcare professionals. And we were asking a really very simple question. What could the European Union added value be for health in the next mandate? Because this was launched just before the institutional changeover last year. And as a result of our work together, we developed a report and a series of 21 recommendations. And we tried to do something different. Rather than just create a list of what the EU should do, and when you do that, you end up having like a Christmas tree of everything that everyone wants the EU to do. This time, we tried to be more refined and say, what should the EU start doing, stop doing, or do differently? And this is a way to nuance and to recognise what's good and can be built up, and where there is less value, and really the EU should shift their resources to what they're doing. And so we came up with a series of 21 recommendations that are grouped together in four key areas. First of all, the group felt very strongly that there are two overarching themes. That's prevention. We've been talking about it for years, the need to shift money, focus and resources towards prevention. And secondly, that there's an urgent need to have convincing and clear messaging about the importance of health at EU level so that health can be mainstreamed across other policy areas. So our recommendations are in these four clusters: improved information for decision making, fostering and supporting greater innovation, improving governance in health and for health, and reducing the political risk for implementing change. This is recognising that at many member state level and at sub-national level, there are organisations trying to introduce change, but change is hard and slow and difficult, and that there could be an EU role in helping to reduce political risk. So since we launched our report, I'm delighted to say that at least two of the recommendations have started to see some change. We called in the report for a need for a genuine approach to patient empowerment. And earlier this year, the European Patients Forum launched the 5E campaign, an initiative for patient empowerment that they hope will be result in changes in process in many European countries. So there is a strong message there about patient empowerment. And also we felt that there needed to be to use the EU resources for health more effectively, that it shouldn't just be the health budget or even the health section of DG Research that should be looking at how they could best deal with health. Perhaps the structural funds could be used. And earlier this year, Commissioner Modas from DG Research announced that there's been a bumper crop of good projects submitted for funding for Horizon 2020, and what they've decided to do is to talk to their colleagues, including in DG Regio, and pass over good potential projects that they don't have the money for that could be financed through structural funds. So that's a really positive way of seeing what we were calling for in our report having traction inside the institutions. So that's enough from me from the introductions. What I'd like to do is initially turn the floor to Mr. Pitterly and say, where are we in terms of health in the priorities of the new Commission and the new Parliament, and how could the recommendations of the report be used to strengthen health in this new mandate? Mr. Pitterly.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mrs. Rose. I would like to welcome one more MEP, Madame Gardini. So we feel much stronger now. We are five. It's really an achievement, you know.
It is.
We are pleased if there are two MEPs, but if there are three, that's and there are five, it's an achievement. So, distinguished colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, let remind you that we are gathered today exactly 1 year after the official launch of the eighth parliamentary term to discuss 21 key recommendations on what the EU should do to bring more health and more health welfare to European citizens. As Madam Rose already explained, the recommendations were brought together by the multi-stakeholders health working group led by Friends of Europe, of which I was also part, Mr. Potts as well, Madam Parvanova, if I remember.
Yes.
So the Parliament was there. I would say that this was in my last 11 years in the European Parliament, this was the most comprehensive or the most ambitious attempt to say something or to propose something to improve health in the European Union. So I was pleased by the format of that group, and I would say that in a way we are still alive. We still work now. Of course, we promote those 2021 key recommendations. There is no need to say again that health is the most important value in people's lives and is an essential part of both economic and social success. Since healthcare is a national responsibility, the question is what added value can the EU provide and what help can the EU bring to its member states in order to tackle the many challenges in the domain of health? We have to face this fact. EU member states are on the brink of facing a crisis in their health systems. Health systems need major reforms, modernization and streamlining in order to become more efficient. But such structural changes are hard to implement, and health ministers not only face an uphill battle to update their health systems, but also lack of adequate political leverage to make the big changes happen. When we talk about a paradigm shift, we would not be talking about cosmetics, but about essential changes in the way we approach health systems. We need to switch from disease to health-oriented systems. We need to become result-oriented. And, for example, one aspect of this is health promotion, which should be understood positively as the way of diminishing the inflow of new patients. In the long run, health promotion is the most cost-effective response for improving the state health. From an ethical standpoint, a healthier society is the one that consumes less healthcare services or needs less healthcare services and products and enjoys healthy lifestyles. In times in which many unions are being proposed, we need to start considering and including health as one of the most important human values and policy aspects. Therefore, in my view, the time has come that the Commission considers launching the Health Union Initiative, as some other unions' initiatives were done in the past already. Within the Health Union, I consider the health governance and health policy coordination is one of the most ambitious elements of it. I don't think member states should transfer any of its health responsibilities to the EU, but rather the EU should help them to achieve concrete progress in their health indicators, health goals and results without taking into account the way of achieving them. And you know, and I'm pleased that we share that idea with Madame Gardini, first of all, who will ask an oral question. The Commissioner, this is the idea of the whole called European Semester for Health, similar to the Economic Semester for Growth and Jobs, which could become a yearly cycle of health policy coordination and framework designed to give member states an incentive to converge towards commonly established health targets independently from the approach legitimately chosen by each member state as far as the objectives are met. The creation of such framework would be possible under a broader and more ambitious interpretation of the Article 168 of the Lisbon Treaty. And I was really attentive to what Commissioner Andriukaitis said in Riga, I would say a few days ago, no, when he mentioned the problem with different interpretations of that article in the Lisbon Treaty. I've been for a long time already in favor of, I would say, of the ambitious interpretation of it. But we may be very different in that. But I think that things are moving. The will is there to do more, and we don't like to be limited by that, because citizens demand more from the European Union. Again, I would say we should be more ambitious in our interpretation. What does it mean, supportive measure? And what is true European level? And what only can be done as a supportive measure to the member states' efforts at the European level? So Europe now needs to think long-term and be creative in seeking out solutions. These recommendations are solid base not only for the institutions, but also for the wider health community to understand one thing clear. The impact of the EU on health is substantial, and it's only likely to increase. And I would like to finish by saying that I think we never, in last year's, or this is the third commission I see at work, but I think that conceptually we are much better prepared than 5 or 10 years ago. I think that we provided many ideas which are considered as useful also by the Commission, and I count on good work in next 4 years together with Friends of Europe and all those who wish more health in Europe. My last point, yesterday, just to tell you that this House is very active, we had another conference which was dealing with health economics in prevention, and an enterprise from Slovenia which works with IBM and Mayo Clinic presented I would say very, very interesting application which is available for free in different languages, which is, again, I would say, a kind of help to the citizens to take more care on their health. And later we will distribute, at the end we will bring also their ideas, which some are, I would say, converging or in line with what we proposed with Friends of Europe. So I'm pleased that there is a kind of a competition in that respect, and this will bring an added value, I'm sure. So, welcome again, thank you very much, and let's use this limited time for new ideas. Thank you.
Thank you. So, let me now turn to Marion Harkin. We've heard from Mr. Peterley that, you know, one of the core challenges at national level is health systems, meaning both the healthcare system and the broader population health, have huge challenges, and it's often they lack leverage to make change. And it's clear that there's a need for change, but there's a gap between the need, the political will, and the ability to do it. So where's the added value that Europe could bring to the challenge of reforming health systems, and have our working group recommendations put some pieces on the table that would help moving forward?
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for the invitation to speak here this morning. I'm very pleased to be here. I had a look at your document. I wasn't involved. I know a number of the colleagues were, including a colleague of mine, Antonia Parvanova. Antonia was very much involved in patient safety, and indeed I did some work on that issue with her. And I felt some of your recommendations were excellent. I thought they were all certainly going in the right direction. And I think what you managed to do was look at it in an overarching way, which is sometimes the difficulty that politicians face because, you know, Mr. Peterlay finished up there by talking about long-term planning. But I think we can do that at European level in a way national governments often find it difficult. Because to some extent, in some member states, there's an element of firefighting going on at the moment. It just happened last night. I happened to be watching, I think it was a news on some channel, I can't remember, but it was talking about a particular drug for a disease, Duchenne syndrome, muscular Duchenne syndrome, where it was about the UK. The drug is now available. There's 300 boys with, it's mainly boys, I think it's always boys, who have this disease, but only 50 of them will get it. Because that's the reality of it. And there were parents on of a five-year-old who is fine now and is particularly good in the water, for example, where he's swimming. But with every month that goes by, from now on, he's going to lose his muscle power until maybe 5-10 years down the line he'll be in a wheelchair and not be able to breathe because the muscles in his heart will be among the last to go. And this new drug will not cure the disease, but it will prolong life and maybe even stop it in its tracks. I didn't really mean to speak about that, it just came into my head right now, but I suppose that gives you, when we talk about access to medicines, and that's one of the things we do in this Parliament, that's one of the realities. But of course, it's not the only reality in access to medicine. There are many others as well. I mean, there are shortages of medicines in different member states, and it has got nothing to do with money. It's to do with, you know, the pharmaceutical companies and how they work. Just very briefly, and I talk about added value then, just my own involvement in health issues here in the Parliament. This is my third term, and I have been very much involved in a lot of issues. For example, I'm co-chair of the carers interest group, which is sort of cross-cutting. It's not specifically health, but it's cross-cutting. And I also co-chair the mental health interest group. And also I'm vice president of the disability interest group. I do a fair bit of work on World Sight Day, which is, again, a lot to do with prevention, which we're talking about. I think it's something like 50% of those who go blind in Europe or who have serious sight defects is totally and completely preventable. I do some work with diabetes and epilepsy, with patient safety and with personalised medicine. So that sort of gives you a range of where I'm coming from. Also, of course, my main committee is employment and social affairs, and health and safety is a core part of that. Indeed, as we speak, we are putting down amendments on that particular dossier at the moment. So your question was, how can Europe bring added value to what is happening? And that's always, in my opinion, a difficult question to answer, because where health is largely a competence of the member state, the EU it's limited in what it can do. Having said that, you know, we need to be as ambitious as possible. So you've mentioned a few things yourself. You've talked about European funds, using them for various, whether it's Horizon 2020, research, innovation. I mean, that's hugely important, particularly important for things like orphan diseases, for rare diseases, where member states will not have the funding to do any research, etc., and where pharmaceutical companies it basically won't be worth their while. So working together, working on research together is absolutely crucial, because 28 member states can do it much more efficiently and much more effectively. So I think that's a really important area. Also, you mentioned the structural funds. And yes, structural funds can be used for health. But all of us know around this table as politicians, the reality is, you know, 12 months before the structural funds are even on the table, member states have already earmarked them for many different things. And to change that ship is, I think it was Barack Obama said the other day, he wasn't going to turn the ship 50 degrees, but he was going to turn it 2 degrees so that in 20 years it would then be at an angle of 50 degrees from where it's going. So I think that's a little bit like how the structural funds will be used for health. But there have been examples in some countries. And I know, for example, in my own country, I'm making a real effort that some structural funds would be used to help train and upskill family carers. So that's an example. Also, the other point I wanted to make was on personalised medicine as well. Again, that's an area where the EU can make real progress. Robotics, assistive technologies. I know some of the projects that are in Horizon 2020 at the moment that have actually got funding, and they're really exciting, innovative projects, which I believe will allow those of us who are getting older and hope to live longer to live independent lives, because I think that's what most people want. So that's just a few ideas. I suppose I'll finish up by saying that to me the most important idea that I saw in this was the whole idea of patient empowerment. I think there tends still to be, but it is changing, a model where you as the patient take what is given to you by the health professional, whoever that is. You are a consumer, you take what you're given, rather than any way of being an actor in the real sense of the word, that you become involved in your own health, in managing your own health, in disease prevention, etc. And I think obviously the internet access to information is changing that. It's changing so many things, and it's changing that relationship as well. I'm not talking here about self-diagnosis. I'm talking about people understanding that they themselves have a real responsibility for their own health. I think that's somewhere where the EU can make progress. And I suppose we can also finally look at things like maybe labelling or issues around things like trans fatty acids, sugar. I mean, these are controversial, difficult ideas, but nonetheless, I think those are areas where we can make progress. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you very much. I'd now like to open the floor, and particularly like to hear from our four members of the European Parliament, to see if you'd like to add in on this. And maybe can we pick up on the message that Mr. Pitalé put on the table about a European semester for health. We've had some conversation about this in the past, but what might it mean? How would we make it happen? What would be the role of the Parliament? So, Mrs. Kadenbach, Mr. Bogovic, Mr. Mikulasic, and Mrs. Mcgardini, would you like to add in on this? Your elements that you want to, either on the recommendations of the report itself, or how we could turn this into a European Union for health? Mr. Peterson said, well, if we can have an energy union, can't we have a health union? Maybe a European semester for health. Can we make that happen? Karen.
Well, thank you so much. I want to go on what Marian Harkin said, patient empowerment, because I do think that this is really important, and I'm very happy when I read the Luxembourgian program for the next 6 months. Now I try to open it so that I can really do that. It says, in terms of public health, patients and innovation will be at the core of discussion. These priorities will be reflected in the efforts aiming to implement a strong regulatory framework providing citizens with quick access to safe and high-quality products. The Luxembourg presidency will also initiate a process of reflection on improved access to personalized medicine for a greater number of citizens and on a better dementia care, which poses a serious challenge to EU healthcare systems. I think this is very, very important because it's a clear message, and I think we really can count on them. Right now, I mean, trying to have to network. We do have a health literacy workshop this afternoon from STOA. Yeah. And you're really invited, if your time allows, to join us. It will start at 2:30. We do have room for more participants, and I think it's really interesting because what it shows, what is necessary, is if we want empowered patients, if they should make informed choices, we have to inform them first. And they have to know what to do with all the information, where to get them. And it's not only the patients, it's actually it's every stakeholder, it's all the health professionals. So I think health literacy is one of the very important things to get empowered patients. That's the one thing. And the other thing is, I think a workshop like that really shows that health is not only a matter of the DG Health, of the health commissioner, but it is, as you mentioned, it's e-health. It's also a question of the other general directors. It's actually, as we have written it down, it's a question of health in all policies. And I think that is something that we really have to work on. But because at the moment I do have a little bit the feeling that even in Parliament it's very much concentrated on the Envy Committee and the member of the Envy Committee, and we really have to try to reach the other members of Parliament, because I think health is something all the members of Parliament should have very high on their agenda. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Mr. Michalazic?
Maybe only a few comments. I don't have any solid paper prepared for this morning, but I think you mentioned it, that these structural funds can be used for health. And having said that, we are so different in member states, and some are quite successful in this, and quite are some are not at all. And I think some countries have included, like Marian said already, have included in their national programs and negotiations with the EU, what are the priorities of the given member state, and whether the member state would have included health as a priority. And this is so different. And for instance, I've followed the case of my country, Slovakia. In the past 5 years, it was a priority. Now it is missing there, although the systems are far from to be ideal, you know. And so, and I think this, and every time when we participate with Karin or Elisabetta, we say that we have to have finance ministers with us, and all this discussion about health may become sterile without money. I mean, I'm sorry to say it this way, but we have to have ideas. We have to promote advanced therapies and organ transplantation things and modernization and robotics, whatever. But you know, I like to quote Baroness Thatcher, although she is not my favorite. She said, you know, the famous story about the Samaritan, you know. When the guy was stopping by the patient, he said, after curing him or helping him to with his wounds, he said to the hostel tender, "This, I give you some money, and you will care about him. I will return, and I will see whether it's enough money." And that's it. So Baroness Thatcher said, after all, the money was needed, you know, in this move of you know. Compassion and you know, looking after the patient and looking with love and everything. After all, the money is needed everywhere and in every case. So so what I think we are moving in the right direction. And when Karin quoted Luxembourg's priorities, the next one will be Netherlands, I think, and they say. Which is excellent. Also, they are focusing on antimicrobial resistance, for instance, and this is so important also. And again, pharmaceutical companies do need our support, because sometimes they are not launching themselves in producing or in putting money in the research, because they are not given enough time for exclusivity for the drug then, you know, because generics are coming. I know it's very complicated, and accessibility because of money is also one thing, and also, but first of all, we have to produce this research and have the new drug, for instance, also for for methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, you know, which is killing patients, thousands, tens of thousands, are being ill and dead because they contract in the hospital this microbe, you know. So it's so complicated, and we have to unite ourselves, and this is perfect. And I congratulate you and Loise and Marian and others to be active. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for highlighting the fact that the Netherlands presidency is going to be taking antimicrobial resistance and the need for new antibiotics as their theme. That was one of the issues we discussed as a case study when we wanted to explore what would it mean, new versions of innovation, and we chose antibiotic resistance as one of the key priorities to discuss. So we recognise that, and we will look forward to working with the Dutch presidency, perhaps bringing forward some of our ideas through that. Now, I understand, Mrs. Gardini, you have a limited time. Would you like to comment?
Yes, just a very few words. First of all, thank you for inviting me. As Alois Peterle has already said, I have tabled this oral question, and I think that the main point is what you have already said, that we have to do this change. We have to change the point of view, because the health is not a cost but a resource. As we know, it's not just a matter to save lives, but we can also save resources we are currently spending with hospitalization, palliative treatments, and social costs. That's why I strongly believe that we have to work towards this goal. And I also ask you to work together, but especially to the members here, please work together in order to transform and to have on this topic also a resolution, not just a debate. So this could be the best way to have on board, as the colleague said before, all the other members, not just the members in ENVI. I also appreciate very much what the Commissioner said in Riga 2 days ago, because it's really important to extend the health issues and to not just the interpretation, but the health issues into the treaties is an important hope for all of us. That's it, because you have already said really everything, but I think we can do extremely important work, and as you know, the citizens are waiting. And we also have to push, and I said this in within the oral question, for a better implementation of the cross-border directive, because this was a well-done job by the Parliament, but it's not yet implemented or very poorly implemented. And this is it's not acceptable. As you remember about the drug, no, for 300 children, 300 boys, just 50 boys have the access, is not acceptable at all. And the Europe of inequality can be stopped. Thank you.
Thank you. I wonder if perhaps we could look in detail at some of the recommendations and explore them a little bit here in the group. And given the inputs we've just had, we focused in on the four clusters. Perhaps we could look at some of the clusters around innovation, because that's a theme that we've picked up on. And we identified what the EU should do differently. Recommendations included, you know, innovation should also be applied to policy and real-world settings, and compared with global best practices. Encourage market uptake of new ideas and tools. I think these are elements that several of you members of the Parliament have identified as saying there's research out there, there's new tools, there's new medicines, there's new ideas, but these have to be applied in ways that are appropriate. We also asked the EU to do differently, assessing and evaluating health, social and economic outcomes of new technologies and innovations. And this refers back to what you said, Mrs. Harkins, about the need to look at the broader aspect of health. So at this point, I'm happy to open the floor to other inputs. I would really like to hear from the people who were in our working group. Mr. Bertolini, you were in there from the WHO. Jan, You were there from a patient group helping us to define some of these recommendations. Looking just at those two recommendations that I identified here around innovation, because that's a theme that's coming forward, is there anything that you, either of you might like to add?
Yeah, maybe I can say something about that. I think actually, just going a step backwards with respect to what has been discussed before, I was thinking while listening to you, and I think one of the main issues that I think is on the table, has been on the table for a long time, but we don't really seem to be able to tackle it properly, this idea of the health in all policies and these visions and so forth, is something that we need probably to tackle with more consistency and more innovative way. So inviting the ministers of finance, of other ministers, is a good point, but we never succeed to do it. So the problem is why we don't do it, why we don't succeed on doing that. So I think there is also, there is a problem also of vision that needs to be implemented in this domain. You know, if you look at a car from the front, you always have the same approach. If you look at the same car from the other side, you see a completely different object. So I think looking at the overarching recommendation of this report, which says health should be made the higher political priority linked to Europe's economic well-being and social cohesion, it's the key point in my view. And we are in a political environment here at the Parliament, and this is a political vision that needs to be put in place more strongly. And I know that many of the MEPs around the table agree with this. But the problem is how to be able to try to look at these issues in a different way. This has to do, has a lot of implications, implications with respect to the economic development, of the austerity measures, or everything. So, and it also, in my view, would help in putting the Parliament and the European institutions closer to the people. I mean, I'm not a politician, I'm speaking now on my own behalf, not on behalf of WHO, but I think this would be very important if we are able, through the work of the collective work of the MEPs, of the various stakeholders here, to bring this message forward, which I think is a very important message, and to try to show how we all are closer to the needs of the people. So that's one thing I wanted to say. And to me, one of the innovative issues that we need to do, and is also mentioned here in one of the recommendations, I don't remember exactly which one, is the strengthening of the economic arguments. We start having some evidence. And Mr. Petele mentioned this workshop which took place yesterday. There is a book being published by WHO, which is... being released, it's published, it's printed, but it's not yet available. You can find it on the Amazon, by the way, but not in the bookstores. It's on economics of prevention. And it tries to build up the arguments on with respect to the savings to the society as a whole and to the individuals and to the public finances coming from investment in prevention, in preventing disease and in different ways. Not only the medical approach in a screening or something like that, but also through the health in all policy once again. And here I think we need to be able to present these arguments much more strongly and much more consistently with the other ministers and the other sectors. This is a point that needs to be emphasized and is actually well represented into the document that we are discussing today. And finally, let me say another thing. There is something here also in the document which I'm always afraid is neglected, because we are always looking forward for innovation, for new things, but there are so many things that we know already and that are not implemented. And we know the trans fat as dangerous for health. They are still circulating in the food, in the supermarkets in many countries. We know that sugar is dangerous for health, and we are struggling with some companies, countries also, on this issue of sugar, which is a very serious business for obesity. And we have countries in Europe which have, obesity is the normality; it's not anymore an exception. You have overweight more than 50%. And we still have, you know, we know that air pollution is causing problems to health. And we are struggling with the fact that, you know, yes, we can decrease 10%, 10%, you know, all these arguments. So I think one of the issues is try to put forward and implement what we know. And I think this commission and this cycle of the parliament is strong enough to, it would make a tremendous contribution to the improvement of the health and the improvement of the social situation in Europe if all these issues would be tackled with, in a proper way, taking into account all the implications, but with, you know, with the implementation of what we know. Because, I mean, it's not useful to ask for new evidence, for new scientific data, for new information, when we know everything. We know the evidence. We have the information. We have everything. We lack consistent action against solid and strong vested interests, which I understand can be difficult to tackle, but they have to be tackled. Otherwise, we just talk. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that, and you highlight some of the recommendations we had around the more effective use of research results for good governance. As you say, the evidence has been piling up. It's not the evidence that lacks. And you also highlighted that we should stop drafting reports and recommendations with no policy follow-up and no follow-through. This is, again, something that the EU is invited to do differently. Jan, did you want to come in?
Yes. Thank you. Jan Le Cam from European Organization for Rare Diseases. In fact, if I just to answer your question about innovation and health, I'd like to come down to two examples, in fact, relating to some of what the MEPs present said. First, cross-border healthcare, the directive cross-border healthcare. I think it's very interesting to look at implementation of that. There is very positive element like the development on HTA, which I think we're very much on track, and that goes in the right direction. There is a strong added value of having HTA, health technology agencies across Europe, collaborating, and there is the right instruments with the joint actions, with the political body, with European HTA network. So that's coming. There is what is ongoing, the European reference networks, and this is huge. And I'm not sure that it's fully appreciated how this can be the embryo of a European healthcare system, even though that's not clearly mentioned in the directive, but that's in practice what's going to happen. And a lot of attention needs to be paid to that, and there is a major issue that goes back to European Parliament, which is about budget. Is that it's completely crazy, sorry to say it, but to have European Parliament voting for a directive creating European Funds Network, but with no budget attached. So now we're struggling, being creative within the budget of the DG5 to try to find some sustainability for minimum operations and also through different budgets like digital and research. But that should come in addition. But the political message of saying, yes, we need to bring together centers of expertise into European Funds Network and then, sorry guys, it's up to you to find the budget in your member state, doesn't work when you coordinate. So just to draw your attention on this point, anything you could do to make it a success, because think 3 years from now, if the European Funds Network are a failure, it's going to be a failure. It's going to take 10 more years to relaunch that. So we have an opportunity now to make that in the right direction. And I can tell you that there is a lot of appetite and interest there, but that the major issue is money, because we don't see member states now saying, I'm ready to pay for the coordination at the European level through my national budget. And the third point in this cross-border directive is what you mentioned, Mrs. Gardini, the mobility of patients to have access to care. And that is the disaster. So I go from HTA, which is success, European Funds Network, question mark because of the budget, cross-border access to care is a disaster. The contact points is a bit messy. It's only starting now. And what is really to gain for citizens for the moment, we see more what we lose. And what patients are saying is that it doesn't work for them. So we're still using mostly the social security regulation. And my conclusion on that is to say that what I would call for is when there is laws, like important legislation like this one being applied, to have maybe a small group of MEPs, 2, 3, 4. Often the rapporteur plays that role, but it would be good to have 2, 3 MEPs which follow carefully the implementation. So we should pay more importance to implementation with the political vision. because what I see a lot is restrictive interpretation. Legal service coming in from European Commission, then that's the end of the of the beginning of what you're starting to do then. So that's the kind of issues. And my last comment on the second aspect of initiative on innovation and health is that currently we are, as a patient group, and that was very new, it's the first time it happens, we're calling the national competent authorities on pricing reimbursement to collaborate at European level, to create a table of negotiations of price linked to the immediate access to the patients and also to further research on this product post-marketing. And that kind of initiative is difficult for the Commission to support, clearly, because that's... But as MEP, you can play a role, I think, to encourage the Commission to support initiative of coming from member states, because that's linked to competitiveness, it's linked to creating an EU market to make it more attractive, but also it's improving directly the health of patients. Thank you.
Excellent, thank you. Given that we are running out of time on this, and I appreciate that many people will want to respond or add on to this, let me first of all pass the floor. I'm delighted to say that we have the chair of the ENVI committee listening attentively, I hope, to some of our conversations, and hopefully you've had a chance to look at the 21 recommendations that came forward on the report. So there's a lot of discussion here about the role of politics, the role of policymakers, particularly in addressing when legislation comes through, when recommendations are coming through, making sure there's some follow-up. How can the ENVI committee help us?
First of all, I'm sorry to be late, but the problem is that we start early in the morning when we have a lot of meetings, and then we have to run from one side to the other of the parliament. I'm going to take on board some and I have to react to something that was said before by my colleagues, and I start immediately from antimicrobial resistance, because the ENVI committee had decided with the coordinator of the political group that the main priorities on health for the next year will be antimicrobial resistance. And we have asked, and we are asking to the Commission to put the point in the new working program from 2016. This is the first point. Later, it is clear that we have to do more on health, but it is also clear that the budget of the European Union, it is focused on some politics, and health, it is not inside. It is clear that 40% and more of the EU budget, it is for supporting the common agricultural policy, that is the only one at the European level, the real European politics. We have not real, politics for health. This is true, and we have to understand that if we want new real politics at new real policy at the European level, we have to improve European budget. We have only 1% of GDP, and we cannot follow, and we cannot be able to improve the level of policy. It is a real problem. We need more research, it is true, but we need also more resources for supporting new researchers. For this reason, we have to change the system of the European budget. We cannot continue to work on 1% of GDP, because with this system, every country is going to say, I'm paying and I want back my money. We have to change the system with a direct financing of the European budget. I have also listened about politics on health and implementation of existing regulation. It is true, because until now we have worked for a lot of time on new regulation. Sometimes we spend time for having some resolution, something additional, some initiative report, but we are not really able to follow the previous regulation. For this reason, we have worked with the coordinators for having a better implementation session. We are starting with new report on the implementation of the existing directive and regulation. For this reason, I think that we are going to have in the next year more activity on the implementation than in the previous year. And at the end, I have to say that some of your recommendations are very useful also for us, because sometimes we spend time working, discussing, but the suggestions coming from outside are always useful. And I have to thank you for your activity and also for your support also on new things to do. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And it's very interesting to hear that the MV committee is going to pick up on this idea of, you know, tracking and reporting on implementation of existing directives and initiatives, because that came through quite a lot in some of our conversations within the working group, which was saying we need to focus on stopping doing things that are ineffective, stopping doing policies and reports that have no follow-up, and focus on a few things that work and make sure there's complete follow-through. So this is very positive to hear. And also that antimicrobial resistance, something that we addressed in our as our case study, because we saw it as a real area where a new paradigm for thinking about innovation and developing new models for drug development could work. This is interesting to hear that we'll see something in the 2016 work program, both in the Dutch presidency and in the Commission's work program. That's very helpful to hear. Thank you. I can see that in terms of time, we've got 3 minutes left, so the time is quite limited for inputs from the floor. I just wanted to let you know that we do have DG Santé in the room. Unfortunately, we couldn't have a broader participation from their side, because I understand you have a management away day today, so the rest of your team are brainstorming, hopefully, on these issues as we speak. But is there anything you wanted to briefly add to the conversation?
Thank you very much. Nothing particular. I mean, I'm very interested from all of the topics which were on the table. If I had to reply to all of them, it would take me probably 3-4 hours. So I don't enter into details. There is just one single thing. There is one of the first questions you put on the floor was on the EU added value on health policy, which I think is very is a key question. There is a position of the Commission on this, which is presented in a communication adopted last year in April on effective, accessible, and resilient health systems. I'm not going to talk in detail about this, but there we try to, or the Commission tried to present what can be done to provide, disturbing national competence in this remit, but what can be done to provide some added value. And we are talking about European reference networks, we are talking about the implementation of the cross-border directive, we are talking about health system performance assessment, which is a very important topic we didn't tackle today, and many other topics. I remain very interested in the follow-up of this debate, of this discussion, and I really think that with a stronger support from the Parliament, there is much to do, and there is much we can actually do. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, from the Friends of Europe point of view, we saw the health working group, the reflection process, as the beginning of a conversation to take things forward. And it's very positive from our point of view to see so many MEPs here in the room interested in taking this, and a recognition that even if there are limited resources and even a limited legal basis in the treaty, what we need to be doing is linking up better the political vision for health with the implementation and the follow-up. And I hope that today this shows that there's some energy, there's some momentum. We hear there's some interesting link-ups to the future work of the ENVI committee. And so given that timing is passing on, and I know that given what happened yesterday politically, it's going to be a busy day for everyone, I do apologise we didn't have time for more interaction from the stakeholders from the floor, but I do thank you for coming. I hope you found it useful and interesting. Please read through the recommendations and the report, because we will be initiating follow-up conversations and debates, looking at innovation in new ways, and looking at how we do things differently in order to achieve a European Union for Health. So thank you to the members of the Parliament, for you, for attending this breakfast meeting, and I look forward to seeing you at a future event. Thank you. At a future event.